Picture this. It's 1245, and a Christian king is suddenly the greatest protector of Islamic law in Valencia.
Right. And it definitely wasn't out of the goodness of his heart or, some early version of multiculturalism.
No, exactly. It was actually born out of fear, which is what we're really looking at today in this exploration into the source material. We're diving into Robert Aspern's research on the Crusader Kingdom of Valencia.
Yeah, it's this fascinating pluri-ethnic crossroads. You've got Muslims, Christians, and Jews living in this really high-tension symbiosis.
High tension is right. I mean, imagine living in a world where your daily life is governed by your own religious law, but the king who, supposedly protects you is of a completely different faith.
Well, it brings up that massive question of how you actually build a functioning society when the conquered subjects are the vast majority.
And then the minority are the new owners. It's basically a demographic hostage situation.
Totally. When the Crusades swept through, the Muslims, the Mudejars, they didn't just vanish. They stayed. Burns actually calls them a vast sea surrounding these really infrequent atolls of Christian settlers.
Right, because if the king had just expelled them all, the Christian towns would have literally starved.
Oh, within a single season. I mean, the Mudejars were the only ones who knew how to work the irrigation systems, the farms, the local markets.
So the Christians were essentially, I don't know, tenants in their own conquered home.
Pretty much. That's why you get these surrender constitutions, like in Ezlida and Elfendek. They had to guarantee Islamic law, mosques, schools, just to keep the workforce from fleeing to North Africa.
But let's be clear, right? These weren't like modern bills of rights. It feels way more like legal scaffolding just to prevent a total economic collapse.
Yeah, 13th century tolerance was absolutely a fiscal strategy. It was not a moral one. Burns calls it a distorted continuity.
Distorted continuity. So, life looks the same on the surface, but you're now trapped in this Christian overgrid. I actually kind of think of it like a massive force software update.
Okay, how so?
Well, the back-end code, the Islamic law and daily customs, that stays the same because the system completely crashes without it. But the user interface, the crown, is this entirely new, incompatible program.
That is a great way to put it. And since that back-end code was essentially read-only, the Christians had to build these emulators.
Emulators.
Yeah, like Christian courts and officials who tried to interpret and manipulate Islamic law to suit the crown's needs.
Right, but at the same time, they're relying on this code to keep the economy afloat. They're also trying to delete it, right? With this massive ideological assault.
Exactly, because the ultimate goal in the 13th century was always conversion. And you had two very different playbooks for that.
Oh man, the Franciscans and the Dominicans. The
Yeah.
Franciscans were the radicals,
Yeah.
yeah, just walking right into mosques looking for a fight.
Yeah, pretty much seeking martyrdom to prove a point through sheer confrontation. But the Dominicans, they took a totally different route. They were the intellectuals.
Right, setting up those language schools in Jativa and Murcia.
Yes, they honestly believed they could win over the Muslim elites through rationalist dialogue and metaphysics.
I mean, I have to push back on that Dominican dream a bit. It feels so incredibly arrogant to think you can just syllogism a population out of a 500-year-old faith.
It was wildly arrogant. They thought if they just explained Aristotle and Thomas Aquinas clearly enough, the Mudejars would just see the logic of Christianity.
Like they'd just click uninstall on their ancestors' religion because of a debate. Come on.
It was a spectacular failure of empathy, for sure. But it highlights that while the overgrid controlled the taxes, it absolutely could not control the souls.
And because they couldn't control the people or even the local economy fully, this wild shadow system popped up, right? When the legal UI failed, everyone turned to the universal language. Exactly. Which brings us to piracy. And we're not talking about rogue operations here. In the 13th century Mediterranean, this was a shared industry.
It was essentially the venture capital of the era. You would literally have a Christian banker in Barcelona financing a ship with a mixed crew just to go raid a North African port.
So piracy was basically the deregulated version of trade. It's how these groups actually interacted when the king and the friars weren't watching.
Yeah, it acted as this interface where the religious friction smoothed out into a business deal. A sailor's loyalty wasn't to the cross or the crescent, it was to the target of opportunity.
Wow. It's such a complex human ecology. I mean,
Well,
you could be fighting a guy on Tuesday and trading with his cousin in port on Friday.
exactly. Conflict and contact were really just two sides of the same coin here. But, there's a major catch to how we understand all of this.
Right, the source material. Because almost everything we've been talking about today comes straight from the royal archives in Barcelona.
Which means it's the winner's perspective. It's neatly filed, preserved, and completely one-sided.
Which leaves us with these massive voices of silence. We've seen a kingdom held together by legal pacts, religious pressure, and shared greed. But what about the Mudejars themselves?
Yeah, if those farmers and sailors could speak today, you really have to wonder how they'd describe it. Was it actually a symbiosis to them?
Or was it just a long, slow disintegration of hope as their entire world was overwritten? It leaves you with a really heavy thought to explore.
Definitely.
I mean, in a society that is built on the software update of conquest, can the original code ever truly survive? Or is it just destined to be buggy and broken until it finally disappears entirely?